Well, normally I'd say good morning, but great morning. Great morning. I'll tell you what, man, I was loving that worship set. I'm in the back and I'm just digging it. It's fun by myself back there because I can get my charismatic on and it's great. Nobody's going to be like, wow, our pastor's really, he's getting after it, man. So, it's interesting. You ever had like people come into your life and you haven't known them long, but you really just appreciate what you learn about them and how they deal with life and everything else? So I was thinking about my friend Alyssa, actually, of all people. And not known her long, and really we've gotten to know each other in the last 6 months or whatever else, but just love her heart, the way she approaches things, you know, and everything else. And I'm listening to her share today, and I just appreciate the heart, the vulnerability, and the honesty. And in that, too, I thought, she just preached my sermon. So let us close in prayer. All right, so now there's some truth to that, and it was so fitting. I'm listening, and I got teary because it's so fitting to what I want to talk about today, and we're going to get to that in a minute. But first off, I don't know where you're at. Like Alyssa said, we're 10 days out from Christmas, and this is that time where you feel the pressure. Last Sunday, man, I was feeling it. I was worn, torn, just ready to be done, everything else. But this week, finally got some shopping done. Yesterday, we finally decorated our house for Christmas. First time ever we made it into the double digits of the month before we finally had it all done. Got that done. We had carols and casseroles last night. That was fun. Getting a lot of different busy things kind of completed and everything else and pulling it all together. And so it's nice to be in that space. But also, I love the fact that we slow down in our Sundays of Advent to just settle the soul, to kind of anchor into things that are the true reason, and I think the stuff that gives us what our hearts most crave, right? For all the lights and fun and pageantry, what we crave is settledness and grounding and stability and a sense of something bigger than ourselves, and that's what I love about the Sundays of Advent. So we've been going through this great, epic story of God, and even that is something that's important to me, because I remember when I first became a pastor, I was all into the details, right? I wanted to kind of plumb the depths of all the details of every nuance of doctrine, theology, scriptural interpretation, and as I get older, I find myself just impressed and moved by the story. This God who is all-powerful, all-consuming, all-knowing, and then coming in the most humble form to invest in us, to meet us where we're at, to take us where we need to go. I think that's an incredible story. And so all the Sundays of Advent are just tracking that story. It goes from the start of the story up to where Jesus comes and how that intersects with our lives today. And so we've looked at really critical themes like peace. Right? Peace in the midst of a world of conflict and tragedy and hardship and that hunger. And we all hunger for peace because even around our lives today, we see where there isn't peace in so many ways and we can't secure it in ourselves. Yet Jesus comes to give peace. Or we looked at hope. And hope can feel very difficult when you feel like things are hopeless. But Jesus reminds us that he can give us a hope that the world can't give. And so today we look at the theme of joy. Right? Joy that we hunger for, joy that we can have as we press into God. So right now, I'm just going to go ahead and pray, and we're just going to get underway with our theme of joy today. Jesus, I thank you for your grace toward us. I thank you for the work that you are seeking to do toward us and in us so that it can pass through us. And that's my heart's cry. I pray that what we aren't, Jesus, is people that are just going through motions or having certain ethics or holding to certain codes and creeds, and it stops there. But I pray that we are people that are so hungry for you, so close to you, so desirous to be used by you in the way you want to use us, that we will throw ourselves before you and be like, all right, whatever it takes, just make me into being more like you, Jesus. I want to sound like you and act like you and think and react like you in this world. Help us to do that, and help these Sundays of Advent to ground us and remind us of those things. And so we look to you to do those things and to teach us in those ways and to fill us with your characteristics that touch and change the world. And so we thank you for your goodness and your perfect name. Amen. So joy, the message of joy. This is a popular theme this time of year, right? Because you're going to go to the mall. I was there the other day, and I would see it all over the place on posters and giant letters and wrapping paper and the cards that they're trying to give us. That it's all about joy, and everybody wants joy, and we're going to sing joy to the world and repeat the sounding joy, and it's all in that mix. And when I think about this word as it relates to Christmas, in my mind, it makes a great deal of sense because I do think the arrival of Jesus into the world was about the theme of joy, right? Because again, when you think about this whole idea, right? Christmas is about Jesus. Jesus is God. And when you read through the Bible, you will find that God is a God of infinite joy. Infinite joy. Now, I know that sounds weird because sometimes what we construct in our minds is a very stodgy, stoic, bearded man on a throne that reminds you of a lifeguard that kind of doesn't love his job. You know, just like, there they are down there being stupid in the pool once again, you know? And like, I get that. Like, I think I had that view of God for a long time. But as you read through the scriptures and you begin to see some of the things about the characteristics of God, you see, like in Zephaniah 3:17, it says that God sings with delight. Sings with delight over his people. Can you get your head in that space for a minute? Like this idea that, you know, like when you sing in the shower, you know, like God's in heaven just like, woo, singing over us. Like, I don't think we think that way. I think we're like, no, he's just like, no, I'm very reserved and calm, you know, and I don't have fun up here. You know, like, no, he does that. Or Jesus talks about this. He gives this offer where he says, hey, enter into the joy of your master. Right? And then entering into that joy also has some things about like, hey, when you live it this way and you do it this way and you're seeking him out, you're gonna step into that space. And so joy is a major theme of the holiday because joy is the theme of God, and why Jesus came into the world was to impart and give us contagious, outrageous joy. Right? And I think this is important because here's a belief that I hold. I believe the brand of the Christian faith is grace. I believe that. Comes up over 150 times in the New Testament. That's our brand. And it's an important brand, a powerful brand. I think sadly sometimes people, when they think about Christians in our world, they don't go, oh, grace. But it is our brand and it should be our tone. But I think the brand is then coupled to kind of this tone of joy. Right? If we've been touched by grace, there should be this resounding joy in us. And when I read through the New Testament, I find that this idea of us being joyful, rejoicing, having joy, comes up over 375 times. Right? So grace is the brand, joy is the jam, you know? And that's the thing we're supposed to kind of inhabit, and it's to be a part of our lives. But here's the thing I find, too, as I'm talking about that, I think about Alyssa's story this morning, even. For all of that that we know and all of that that we believe, we still struggle sometimes with joy. Like, it can be elusive. We can worry it away. We can fret it away. We can waste it away. We can pursue it in wrong ways, and therefore we push it further away. Like, all of that happens. And it kind of then raises the question, like, why does that happen? Right? If it's such a pervasive theme in the scriptures, and it's a promise for us to lean into, why do we seem to battle always having it or experiencing it or whatever else? And I go back to what we've been doing throughout Advent. I go right back to the very first page. I look at the story of the man and the woman in the garden, and everything that happens is like just the perfect archetype of all kind of problem and solution in our world. And so when I go back to that story, I see it starts bliss, beautiful, carefree. Right? Here's this man and the woman, and they're connected with God, and they're connected with nature, and they're basically nudist vegetarian baby makers. Like, that's their occupation, right? Like, it's perfect, right? Life is unencumbered in every conceivable way, and with that, we would go, and that's why they had so much joy then. See, our temptation is to say the reason there was also joy in that Genesis 2 space was because the conditions were right. And this is what we tend to think. This is the a little bit of the lie we believe, that if my conditions were just so, then my joy would be just so. And we look at their situation, they go, their conditions were right, so their joy was complete. I would disagree with that. I would say it's not about condition, it's about presence. And not like, ooh, under the tree with bows. I mean, where there is the presence of God, there is an unshakable joy. Right? And here, matter of fact, David writes about this. The psalmist does. He says in Psalm 16:11, He says, you make known to me the path of life, and in your presence there is the fullness of joy, and at your right hand are pleasures forevermore. So what David says there is where there is the presence of God, there is the presence of joy. So if I go back to Eden, Genesis 2, they're chilling, they're naked, they're having fun, they're naming animals, they're doing all of that, but that's not what brings their joy. It's that God walks with them. God is present among them. God is connected in an intimate relationship to them, and from that, they have a security of joy. It's there. But when the mutiny comes, in Genesis chapter 3, the rejoicing flees, and the joy is pulled out of the story. But I want you to notice the connectivity here. So they reach out, they take, they eat. They suddenly realize they're naked, they're ashamed, they're afraid, and they're hiding. And so then the man says, I heard you, God, coming into the garden in the cool of the day, right? And from that, they hide. They hid themselves from, what does it say? They hid themselves from the presence of the Lord. So if the psalmist says there's joy in the presence of the Lord, and the man and the woman in their situation try to hide from the presence of the Lord, they're going to hide from the source of joy. They're running away from the thing that could secure them and house them. So in shame and insecurity and in fear, they extract themselves from the anchoring point of their lives. And I think since that time, that's exactly what we as a race struggle with. Like, we're like, I want joy. And God's like, well, great, you need to be my presence. We're like, whoa, but I got a lot of other baggage. I want to, and that can't be in your presence, and so I don't quite want your presence, and so there's this struggle in those spaces. And so I think what it leads to is kind of this joyless existence, or a chasing of joy, or maybe even looking at joy completely different because it feels, again, so elusive. I think there's different people that face this problem in different ways. Just personality types, maybe, or persuasions in life. I think there's some persons in this world that say, you know what, I believe in joy, but I don't think it's very realistic, so I seek pleasure. I just seek pleasure. Like, sure, in theory it's a thing, but in practice, pleasure's just easier. So that's the hedonist in life, right? Others say, I believe in joy, but I just think it's so rare, you probably shouldn't lean into expecting it. That's the existentialist. And they're always having this crisis. Others believe there is no real joy, but they cope. They're just sort of the rationalist. Some people say there is no joy, and they're just joyless. That's the nihilist. And then some say, no, joy's real, joy's possible. I believe in a theory of joy, a doctrine of joy, a God of joy, but then they live their lives joylessly, and they're called Baptist. No, I'm kidding. Like, but graduate of a Baptist seminary right here. So, right? So there's these weird things, right, that we deal with when it comes to joy. But I think what we all acknowledge is that there's still a residue of want. There's still this sense of craving what was lost. And I think in the craving, the wanting, the knowing it's out there somehow, how do we get to it? The way to get to that can be feel so hard or challenged or even impossible that we go, I'll just settle for something different. And so we settle for happy. Right? We go, that is accessible, that is reachable in some way. It's the surrogate. It's a surrogate. So we look to people or things, ideas, trips, conditions, right? We're just oscillating through the different things, chasing happy to happy to happy, because, man, that dopamine fires every time a new happy thing can come into our life. It's the shiny object. It's the unique person. It's the whatever. Like, we cleave to those things, right? And I'm going to say something that might throw you off a little bit coming from a pastor. I actually think you can be happy in this life. I really do. I'm going to go a step further and say, not only can you be happy in this life, you can be happy without God in this life. I'm going to go one step further. I'm going to say, in fact, you might be happier without God in this life. Like, you can get to those spaces. Right? Like I was kind of thinking about this a little bit the other day. I mean, this is this thing I get into, but I'm a big fan of the Sermon on the Mount. Like, I love it. We're going to do a whole series in the Sermon on the Mount in 2025. And I'm like, very first words out of Jesus' mouth, blessed are the poor in spirit. That doesn't sound happy. And then he's like, and blessed are those who mourn. That doesn't sound happy. Like, going with Jesus doesn't sound happy always. And he's like, oh, don't worry. Blessed are those who suffer and are persecuted. That doesn't sound happy. He says, when somebody slaps you in the face, turn the other cheek. Well, that doesn't sound happy. Right? If somebody sues you for this, give them double. That's not happy. I know people in my life that don't follow God or believe in God, or they're spiritual, but they don't hold the religious conviction, and they're incredibly happy many times in their life. I think that's true. And in fact, there's this scene with Jeremiah. He's frustrated at this fact that you can be happy without God. Like, it bugs him. He says this, Lord, you always give me justice when I bring a case before you, so let me bring this complaint. Right? And I love that, because here's the thing I love. It's his Ecclesiastes moment. He's like, life isn't fair right now, and I'm very mad. What's he mad about? Why are the wicked so prosperous? Why do evil people seem so happy? It's the case in point that happy is possible. Happy can be bought. Happy can be manufactured. And happy can be apart from God. You can be wicked and be happy. 100%. So I just want to clear that out. Like, if somebody says, I think you don't need religion to be happy, I'm like, 100%. In fact, religion might make you sad sometimes. Walking with Jesus might hurt sometimes and make you sad. That's going to be absolutely true. But here's the thing about this idea of happy. It reminds me of going on a long, arduous hike with a bag of low-caloric food. Right? Like, tastes good, man. Like, these gummy worms are rad. But you ain't hiking the Appalachian Trail on that. Right? You're just not going to do it. What ultimately you find about happy, it's like a match in the wind. It's like cotton candy in the rain, you know. It's like a balloon with a needle. It can be there and be gone like that fast. I've had many happy moments in my life. Wake up to happy mornings only to have sad evenings, right? It just can happen. It's just in the equation. I remember I'd always laugh about that when I would go to Disneyland. Right? Like, here, you've just thrown down $5,000 for the day, right? To go to the happiest place on earth. And when you're getting to that fireworks show at the end of the night, it's amazing how many children are crying. Like, they're just spent, man. Too much happy makes sad, you know? And it just, it illustrates to me that whole thing. Happy to unhappy just can happen in a moment, because we can't achieve as human beings something truly sustainable. So we chase the endorphin, we chase the moment, we chase the feeling, because that is probably the closest we can get. So that's kind of the bad news, but the good news is that God, even in the midst of our weird chasing, was on the move, right? Like, he sees it. In fact, he sees the chasing, and because remember we learned that he subjected creation to futility, but in hope, I literally think he's like, man, part of that thing where you keep chasing and you get it, but then it evaporates, and you get it again and it evaporates, and then you get kind of discontented from it. He's like, that's the place I want you to get to. So then you see that I am the only source of the thing you need. You won't keep grasping for the straws of life and the emptiness of things, the vain distractions of happiness. No, he's like, no, I want to step back into the story, and I want to give you an offer of joy. And so that's what happens in the story. We lose the joy because we lose the presence of God, but quickly into the story, God reemerges, like to Abraham, and he's like, I want to do a thing in you, and I want to do a thing with your family, and I want to do a thing with this family that becomes a nation, and as they grow into a nation, I'm going to now start to rekindle my presence among you in unique ways. And so he does that. He does this thing of the tabernacle at first, where the presence of God resides, and then eventually the temple, where the presence of God resides. But where there is that, there is also joy. The psalmist says this, send out your light and your truth. Let them guide me. Let them lead me to your holy mountain, to the place where you live. And there I will go to the altar of God, to God, the source of all my joy. Again, I'm just trying to get this thematically for you. He was present with them in Eden. It was joy. They lost that. Now it's chasing happy. And he comes back and he's like, now I will dwell with you. And in that space is what? God's presence, which is joy. And so the wonder and beauty of that was there. But here's the thing you got to remember. Like, you think about that Hebrew period of scripture. It's in one location, right? Only one group of people can be near the presence of God. If you really reduce it, only males from the tribe of Levi with no defects can be near the presence of God. And even more so, only one person a year can really step into the presence of God. So it's like, hey, we're getting closer to joy. We're getting closer to the proximity and presence of the one that can give that, but it's also constricted and limited, and it's under kind of tight rein. But it creates a hunger. Like a hunger that maybe God's presence will come differently. Not in this tent or in this temple, not behind all of these layers and barriers and requirements of purity to come closer and closer and closer. Maybe it will come in a more radical way altogether, and not just for one nation, but for all the nations. Well, we see the promised joy come in Luke chapter 2. Scene opens with shepherds. And we always see shepherds as these very nice and quaint and sweet, and they love the land and they love their animals and everything else. But in their culture, people didn't trust shepherds. They were kind of like the riffraff. They were kind of hicks, you know, like the guys who'd be like, I was abducted by aliens once. Like, okay, it's those guys, you know. I believe in Sasquatch and QAnon is good news, you know. Like that was kind of shepherds, you know. They weren't really necessarily the greatest eyewitnesses for things. But it's to those very people, which probably tips us off. Like, hey, God's coming to the riffraff first to share his good news. And so an angel of the Lord appeared to them, and the glory of the Lord shone around them, and they were filled with great fear. And the angel said, fear not. Like, I'm a glowing dude flying in the sky. I'm going to be a little fearful. But fear not, for behold, I bring you good news of great joy that will be for all people. Good news, great joy, all people, for unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior who is Christ the Lord. So it goes from great fear to great joy. And not just for these Jewish shepherds, for all peoples everywhere. And so they go and they see, and joy rushes over them. And why does joy rush over them as they see this little child? Because Jesus is God, and in the presence of God is the fullness of joy. Right? So even as a little infant, it's enough for them to just go, oh, this is what we've been missing. This is what we've been needing. This is what we've been longing for. And then as they see God, they have to just go back to their normal lives. But it says, as the shepherds returned, they were glorifying and praising God for all they had seen and heard as had been told to them. And so part of the way I love to see the story is that it opens up with these angels rejoicing, and it closes with the shepherd saying, I'll take it from here. And they're rejoicing. And you know what they did as they're going off rejoicing? They went back to their stinky job that wasn't appreciated by a lot of people, and they still were going to have the reputation that they did among the community, and it was all of that, but they had been in the presence of God. That was the defining difference, right? And when you continue to read the story, it wasn't like, hey, it was just when Jesus was there 2,000 years ago for 33 years, the joy was in the world. And when he split, it went away. No, Jesus says, hey, when I came into the world, I've left my presence with you. I've deposited myself into this harsh realm that only can give you maybe happy, and I'm going to give you joy that is not bound by the conditions, an unshakable joy. In fact, in John 15, he says this, I have told you these things so that you will be filled with my joy. And yes, your joy will overflow, right? Now, he's saying this to a group of dudes. They're going to get their butts handed to them for following Jesus. They're going to be in prison. They're going to be tortured. They're going to be hated. They're going to be on the run sometimes. And he's like, yeah, I know. I told you that was going to happen. But you're still going to have joy. But it has to do with, we have to lean into the presence of God for that. Like, if I just want it through osmosis, like, hey, I believe, but I'm not really pursuing presence, I might feel like, again, the joy is elusive. I have to press into the place where the presence is. Jesus said it this way, yes, I am the vine, and you are the branches. Those who remain in me, and I in them, will produce much fruit, but apart from me, you can do nothing. Right? So it's the reminder to me, when I have stressful days, and painful days, and heartbroken days, where I could just as easily go, you know, I'm just going to wallow over here. Or I can say, oh, I'm going to pursue and go over here, right? And the conditions may still stink, but the joy can be the anchor. Because what's wild to me is that now we, as individuals and even collectively, we're that new temple. We're that new Eden. We're that receptacle where the presence of God can dwell. But the joy doesn't come from the circumstance. It comes really flowing from seeking God over just pursuing happy. It's that thing that can transcend the conditions, even when things are crumbling apart. I would say it's based on what we know even more than what we sometimes feel. Because again, the feels are going to be there. But then we got to know, hey, this is the promise. This is the source of what I need. And I press into that more. A quote that I've grown to love and read to you many times over the years is from Malcolm Muggeridge. He says, "I can say that I never knew what joy was like until I gave up pursuing happiness, or cared to live until I chose to die. And for those two discoveries, I am beholden to Jesus." See, that's the core of what he wants to do. He wants to give us invasive joy, but it requires a reckless just abandonment to him to find those things. And he wants us then to take that to the world around us. I close with a great passage. Jesus is praying. It's, we call it his kind of like his final prayer to his Father. He's kind of getting a lot of things out there into space. And he says, "I am coming to you," right? He knows death is imminent. "Father, I'm coming back to you. And I've told my disciples many things when I was with them in this world." Why? "So that they will be filled with my joy." Like, I love that. Like, even when I think about the Sermon on the Mount, why did Jesus give us the Sermon on the Mount? For some ethical code or creed? No, he gave it so we would be filled with joy. It takes doing it to be filled with joy too, but he gave it so that we'd be filled with joy. But notice he doesn't just want us to be filled with joy and I'm just a cul-de-sac of my happy little joyful thing. He closes it out by saying, "Just as you sent me into the world, I am sending them into the world." I think one of the greatest ways that we highlight the power and the beauty and the grace of Jesus is that we press into that presence, we have that joy, and in the harshness of life, we share that joy with others. Right? In fact, I think that's the way we even experience it more. We experience through express. Experience through express, because that is what Jesus came to do. Let's pray together. Jesus, I know that we are on a spectrum right now, whether it's people online or here in the room. We are on a spectrum. Some people just had the best day yesterday. Best day. So happy, so fun. Some people had one of the worst days yesterday, so miserable, so hard, and then probably all sorts of things in between. I pray that in all of it, we would never say, "Today's so happy, I don't need to pursue the presence of God where there is joy." And I pray that there's no day so hard that we go, "I'm too tired to pursue the presence of God and find joy." I pray that we are every day thinking about this almost as preventative medicine. I must dwell in the presence of God no matter the conditions, because things will change. Things will change. You don't. And we know that we need our source in you. So help us to be that and to seek you in your good name.